The Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.
The Joanne O'Riordan Podcast. A Big Red Bench production for Cork's Red FM.
Hi, welcome back to the Joanne O'Riordan Podcast with me, Joanne O'Riordan. This week, as I mentioned last week, we've got an incredible guest of Michael Curran, current AFLW Ireland president, and a guy who everyone really knows within their AFL circles here in Ireland. Now, we do have a slight technical glitch with this podcast. It's all down to the wonderful Air Fibre broadband here in Mill Street, County Cork. Michael's interview was actually cut a little bit at the start, so you're going to join our conversation a teeny tiny bit late. But for context, at the start of the conversation, myself and Michael dived into his full career and how we got interested in Australian football. So Michael is from County Clare, place to be. He actually lives next to both of the Considine sisters, funnily enough. And he went up to UCD in the early 90s and got interested in AFL just from seeing it. Michael tells us basically how he got interested in AFL, how he participated in the first team. And I think the funny thing is about talking to Michael, we actually got a proper maybe insight into how AFL system is run, which you definitely have to tune in for in this podcast. So even though we're missing a bit of the podcast, the content is still quite good, I can assure you of that. So please follow in, listen and enjoy.
When, I suppose, a club reaches out to one of the girls, you know, maybe like the Sarah Rose or the Ashley McCarty's or whoever, is it a case that they're expecting it? Or like, is it totally kind of out of the blue for some of them? Like, is it just a case of where a recruiter would go, like in a magazine? Obviously, it's a bit exaggerated, but I want that one, you know, that kind of vibe. Or is that like how it works from the club's angle?
Yeah, I suppose it's probably a combination of both, Joanne. I suppose initially, if a club is initially contacting the player, sometimes that can come a little bit out of the blue, in that the player mightn't have any knowledge that somebody was watching them or scouting them or interested in them, or they mightn't, their radar mightn't be on AFLW at all, you know. So in some cases, obviously, if you're going to go to a talent event like a combine, be it in Dublin or be it in Melbourne or some of the girls went to last year, you're going to know that. That's why you're going there, that people are looking for you with the potential to be recruited to a contract. But if you've got a scout that approaches after a game, or if you've got someone that rings you from Melbourne or emails you or hits you on Instagram or whatever saying they're interested in having a chat, that could certainly come out of the blue for some players. But I think definitely of the girls that have been signed to date, it was probably a combination of both. You know, and in some instances, I think it's fair to say probably AFLW is not for everybody. So some players might be contacted and they might just say, look, no, I'm not that interested, or it doesn't suit me at this time in my life to even explore it. In some cases, girls will have a chat about it and go through various interviews and stuff with the clubs, and it still mightn't work out. And then obviously the ultimate goal is that progresses, that a player is happy, the club is happy, and a contract gets signed, and that player then can look forward to heading over to Australia and playing a season in the AFL Women's for 6 months every year. So that would be amazing, obviously.
Yeah, and like it's semi-professional at the minute, so like they do get a return from it, if that makes sense. Like obviously ladies football at the minute is just like, not to be like pedantic about it, but it's based on love and, you know, your county representation and things like that. Whereas like going over to Australia and competing in AFLW, like that gives you like potential opportunities that maybe you wouldn't have had kind of before.
Oh, for sure. I think that would be the main attraction, like from working with most of the girls over the last few years, the main thing they would say was it's the actual opportunity to play sport professionally or even semi-professionally, and that's your only focus. You know, like in fairness, as you've said here, they're professional in every aspect apart from title, effectively. Like they don't get paid, they don't even get expenses in most of the time. Whereas they're putting in a huge amount of hours in terms of training, games, preparation, fitness. So when the Irish players go over to Australia and they go to the clubs, they are there just to play football. In fact, in most cases, their visas prohibit them from even working. So they are fully focused on sport. So this is fantastic. You know, they might have three pitch sessions a week, three gym sessions a week through your pre-season. Then you get into season and you're playing a match every Saturday. So it's absolutely fantastic, and they have all the support. The facilities are absolutely amazing. I've been at a few of the clubs with some of the girls. I was up in Adelaide when Ailish Constantine got signed up there. Amazing facilities, you know, medical teams, physios, nutritionists, all the support staff, numerous coaches, well-being officers, everything that you could ask for in one central location. So yeah, that's definitely the huge plus. And I think most of the girls that have gone over and played and continue to go over and play say that that's the real main attraction, is to be able to play professionally for 6 months, focused wholly on sport, not have to worry about getting up for work in the morning after playing a hard game on Sunday or racing to training after you finish work in the evening. So that's a huge bonus, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, I know even some of the girls, like, as you were saying, fair enough, their visa might prohibit them from actually like participating in like, say, a non-sporting job. But I know like a lot of them have undertaken like different courses or like maybe shadowed or mentored. Like I know like Ashley McCarthy was talking about her physio career, and she said going over to Australia like helped her big time. I know Sarah Rowe said the same thing. Like, do you find that like it provides other career opportunities that maybe like other people wouldn't necessarily have? Like, I know sport does that anyways, but like going to Australia, like Sarah Rowe learned cognitive brain therapy, like I assume something like that would be hard to find like in Ireland. Like I don't know the cognitive brain area here, but like, you know, something along those lines. Like, it's just a learning curve, I suppose, as well for the girls.
Oh, for sure. And there are the opportunities to do those various things that you've said, be it study or be it get some like shadowing experience in the professional environment, or, you know, working or see how other parts of the club work because all of the different facilities are together. So yeah, absolutely. Like there's the sports element of which is the main reason you're there, but there's also the opportunities then to, as you say, go and study, go and enhance your professional development to a certain extent, or go and experience a bit of the culture of whatever city you're in, be it Melbourne or Sydney or Adelaide or Brisbane, on the bit of downtime that you do have. Yeah. So overall, as a life experience, as well as a sporting experience, it's definitely a very positive experience and a very positive thing to happen for anybody. And be it even if that's only for one season and a 6 month block, or you get to go back year after year, which is kind of the best of both worlds, where some of the girls are coming back, they're playing their GA season, then they're heading back out again in November normally and playing another 6 months and combining both. That's fantastic as well. So loads of opportunities. Yeah.
Yeah. And like going back to like the recruitment and signing the contract kind of process, like what do you find is the main like stumbling block? Like what do kind of girls come to you and say, look, I'm not really too sure about like this aspect, like is it family, work, GA, or is it just like maybe just look, I don't really think I'm that good, like I'm not that into it, you know, give it to someone else like who'll appreciate this much better than me, you know?
Oh, yeah. Again, like it would come down to each individual, I suppose. And as I say, at certain times, it might not be for a certain person, and that's perfectly fine. And there has been circumstances where, you know, take, for example, Grace and Eve Kelly at West Coast Eagles probably could have gone out a season earlier, but it didn't suit them because they were both at various stages in their careers, just finishing college, starting teaching jobs, etc. So timing is a lot to do with it, for sure. Yeah. But the good thing, I suppose, is that the clubs are very willing to work with players, and like if they're interested in you and you've had a few interviews and had a few chats and there's a mutual interest there in doing something, and if the timing isn't right for you, in a lot of cases the clubs will say, well, look, let's have a chat again in 12 months and see how you're fixed or whatever. So yeah, normally you'd find it's probably the likes of college and finishing college courses and getting the adequate years off or time off from college. You know, again, you know, you might be able to get a year off, 2 years off, but at some point you might have to come back and finish your course. Work wise, we've had like a couple of teachers who were able to take a career break and whatever and go and play. And yeah. But also, as you said, there could be personal circumstances, family circumstances, various things feed into it. So yeah, a lot of things have to align, I suppose, for it to suit a player. But if you're ready to go and in a place and a time in your life where you can head over there for 6 months, then that's fantastic. But in any other scenario, as I say, there's probably a bit of flexibility there as well. If clubs are genuinely interested in people, they'll hold on to them. Like an example of that this year would be Kate Flood was unable to return to Fremantle Dockers this year for her second season due to personal circumstances, but they've already pretty much said that the door is open for her to return in 2022. So that relationship is there, and that level of support is there across the board, in fairness.
Yeah, and like, do you, obviously, because you have experience of both men's and women's, do you find that maybe because the men's is kind of so professional and kind of, not that the women's isn't, but that the men's is kind of so, it's like hawk, like you're watching it like a hawk, right? Like, I mean, we saw with Conor McKenna from Tyrone, like we saw like the scrutiny like that the men's game is under. Like, do you kind of find that with the women's, like that they're a bit nicer is the wrong word, but maybe they're just a bit more understanding in the women's game than they are with the men's game? I know that's like a total generalization, but like the scrutiny probably wouldn't be as intense. Like if, I don't know, let's pretend if like Niamh Kelly decided she wasn't going to go back with her sister, like you wouldn't be kind of, there wouldn't be headlines in the Sun about it. You know what I mean? The following day.
Yeah, no, for sure. Now, look, we're all aiming and hoping for the day that the women's game goes fully professional as well. But for the minute, I suppose, yeah, the main difference would be that men is fully professional. So that means you're generally going on a two-year contract. If you're one of the young guys heading out from Ireland, you're heading over on a two-year deal and everything, it's all in at that stage. Whereas on the women's side of it, it is technically semi-professional. So it's a six-month contract, but bear in mind, you've got the 15 or 16 girls that are going over from Ireland and relocating, and they're going to be fully focused on their sport. But the majority of their teammates are going to be working as well part-time, you know. So you're going to have your nurses, your students, your teachers. So those girls in Australia are going to work and going to play in the evenings and play on the weekends and stuff. So that would be the principal difference, I suppose, and that little bit of flexibility would have to be there in terms of being a bit more understanding of individual player circumstances and stuff. So, yeah, like, as I say, we all hope that over the next 4 to 5 years, the women's game goes down that fully professional route, which would be fantastic for the girls. But in the meantime, that's the principal difference. The guys and on the men's game, then obviously, yeah, you just mentioned the level of scrutiny, the level of interest from the press. It's full on over there. Like, it's pretty much a religion in Melbourne and some of the other cities. So yeah, every move these guys make is potentially going to be in the headlines. So I know, like, Conor got a particularly hard time over there before he came back, Conor McKenna. So yeah, that's the flip side of it, I suppose, as well, is that you're held to those high standards and everything you do literally is in the public eye as well. But at the same token, I was just going to say, at the same token, the level of support and interest in the women's game is growing year on year, and that can be seen over there by the crowds that are attending games. And I think there was 53,000 people at the grand final in Adelaide Oval there last season, which is absolutely amazing stuff. Like, so, little by little, definitely the women players and the AFL women's players are more recognisable and becoming household names. But I think everybody, fans, teams, clubs, press alike, appreciate the fact that these girls are part-time or semi-professional.
Yeah, I was going to say there's like a particular, like it's a niche aspect, but like it's a cooler aspect as well. Because I mean, you could see, I don't know, someone, I don't know, kicking like a winning score, for example, in like a final, and then the following day they're teaching your daughter. Like, there's a level of intimacy and connection that I suppose isn't as much kind of with the men's game. I was just going to say, like, to go back to like my first, like, I suppose, meeting, I suppose, with international rules and Australian football and whatever, was I was in Cavan for the international rules in 2013. I think it was 2013, yeah. And like, I was just like enamored with the game. Like, I just thought like it was one of the coolest things on the planet. Like, did you see the benefit of hosting those international rules games? Or were you one of those people that was like, yeah, this is a very sanitized version of what you're going to get in Australia? Do you know what I mean?
In relation to the Aussie rules, sorry, Joanne, I just lost you for 2 seconds there. In relation to the international rules series,
the series I was kind of going on, like the back and forth, because that was my first introduction to, like, live kind of like AFL or whatever. But even I knew it was a somewhat sanitized version of what was going on. But do you find that, like, after those kind of series, that the interest would kind of peak with your teams?
Oh yeah, for sure. Like, anything. Well, previously, over the last few years, that would have probably been more the case. Whereas now, there's pretty much so many Irish players over there, especially in the women's game, that and there's a lot of promotion here, and it's getting picked up a lot more in the press and stuff. So it's probably more of an ongoing thing. But previously, pretty much the International Rules Series was the only exposure to anything like the game of Aussie Rules that a lot of people would see, or and it would be for a burst of a month or two of publicity every year or every 2 years when the series was played. So yeah, and definitely back when we were playing ourselves and recruiting initially, anytime there was an international rules series, we would have seen a jump in numbers around that, and obviously been able to do some promotion around it and stuff. But yeah, probably not so much at the minute now, in that the level of interest in the fact that there's 15, 16, 17 Irish girls playing professionally over there, that's pretty much keeping it at the forefront of the public's attention for longer periods of time and stuff, you know. But yeah, and there's no doubt in the earlier years, the international rules games were probably more infamous for their dust-ups and brawls and stuff than for their skills. And a lot of people were tuning in for that element of it, for sure. But I think both sides, both the GAA and the AFL, have worked to take that kind of physical element out of the game. As to whether or not that has diminished the game or not in terms of its interest as a spectacle, I'm not sure. But that was definitely one of the highlights going back along through the years. Anyway, there's some great highlight clips on YouTube to be found.
I was going to say, yeah, no, I was about, oh, was it 10 maybe when that infamous one happened, like the big one in Croke Park?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I remember I was mad into WWE at the time, and I literally just thought I was watching WWE for a while. I was all game for it, and then my brothers were like, no, this is that, like, that's Graham Kennedy. And I was like, oh, wait, what? I remember just being like uber confused by what was going on, but loving it at the same time for some weird reason. But yeah, like you were saying there about kind of the women's game, it kind of being like, how did you kind of come about setting up kind of AFL kind of women's Ireland, like over here? Like, what was your, did you see like an opportunity, like a niche opportunity kind of popping up? Like, did you have like some weird intel that like women's like AFLW was kind of going to explode over in Australia? Or were you just like, look, let's just give the girls the opportunity and see what happens?
It was primarily that, Joanne, to be honest. Like, I'd had such enjoyment from the sport over a long number of years and working with the men and playing and everything. And just, there had been some women's teams playing, but it was really only a few girls here and there. But still, the girls were having huge success. Like, there was an Irish team that would have played back as far as 2010 at what's called the Euro Cup. It's an annual nine-a-side European Championships. So there would have been an Irish team entered in that from 2010 pretty much up to 2017. And then in 2017, we were in Melbourne for the AFL International Cup, which is effectively the World Cup of Aussie Rules. It's on every 3 years. Actually, it was meant to be on last month, so we should be back from Australia at this stage, but that's been postponed for a year now. But anyway, at that tournament, there was an Irish women's team that actually won the tournament, and the final was at Etihad Stadium, the second biggest stadium in Melbourne. It was a fantastic event. Yeah. And just coming home from that, I suppose, it was really that, a drive. Myself and a couple of the girls just said, look, let's give the girls an organized competition, some structures where they can get involved, get more people playing, get more exposure to the game, get more participation, get some teams, and continue to build on that. I suppose the parallel with AFL Women's was, obviously we were aware of it, but it was more coincidental than deliberate. Okay. But it just happened that it was a good time in general to promote women's football with those opportunities to play in Australia as well. So when that was 2017, when AFL Ireland Women's was formed, just towards the end of the year, actually around October. And at that competition in Melbourne, that year, there was only one Irish girl in AFL Women's, and that was Laura Corrigan-Drea from Cavan, who had actually been living in Melbourne. So she was recruited from Melbourne and had been played on as he was over there. So she, like, whereas Cora would have been the first girl to fly over purposely to play Aussie Rules, you know. So Laura was on that team when I was in Melbourne, and there was just a bit of interest starting to come into the sport and into the professional side of it. So it was really kind of in parallel. We got AFL Women Ireland going here at home, and we just started with a model where we felt would work best, where we had small teams all around the country, and we played a kind of a nine-a-side format. So you didn't have to have huge numbers, and like, we had teams straight away, you know, from Clare, West Clare Waves, who, as it turns out, have been one of the most successful teams across the world, not to mind in Ireland. They've won like 7 or 8 cups in a row. But Cork Vikings, Dublin Angels, West Dublin Garrisons, All these teams all across the country, Midland Tigers, loads of teams. So we just kind of decided let's put and support a team in all these geographical regions around the country, so that theoretically any girl that wanted to play Aussie rules could get to a kick within an hour of her home, let's say, something like that. So that was kind of the theory behind it, and it's kind of grown from there. And really, it's, I suppose, the success then of the Irish girls going over to play in AFL Women's has been a huge help to us, because A, you've got the awareness, B, you've got girls that just want to come out and try the sport and see what it's all about. You've got people that are interested in going to play professionally and want to play some football here to get a bit of experience, see what the game is like, learn the skills. Again, you know, the best example of that would be Ailish Constantine from Clare, who played a full season here in Ireland with us for West Clare Waves. And then when she went to that initial recruitment camp in Melbourne with 11 Irish girls from here, we all flew out together. Like, she immediately caught the eye of the scouts, because you could see that she had played the game and she was comfortable with the game and she was comfortable with the ball and she had the basic skills. So that was of huge advantage to her, and she was the first girl to get signed from those recruitment camps in with Adelaide Crows. So there's all of that. And then, of course, we have the international competitions. So, like, I'm involved, as I said, with the Irish women's team. So there's the opportunity as well to maybe you get to play for Ireland, put on a green jersey. And there's an annual competition in Europe, which is the Euro Cup, which is a nine-a-side competition. That's every year in a different location. Every 3 years, then there's the European Championships, which is a full 18-a-side tournament. And our Irish team actually won that in London just last October, and there was a number of the girls that went to play in Australia were playing on that. And then you have the AFL International Cup, which is the World Cup of Aussie Rules, basically every 3 years in Melbourne. And for the first time ever, that was due to take place in Queensland in August, but obviously had to be postponed due to COVID. So potentially out to 2021, but maybe even 2022. So look, at the way we wanted it and the way it's transpired is we wanted there to be something for everybody. If you just wanted to come out and try a new sport, meet a few friends, get a bit fitter, have a bit of fun, you can do that. If you want to play club football competitively and try and win some competitions and premierships here in Ireland, you can do that. If you want to put your hand up to be selected for an Irish national squad, we now have an Irish universities squad as well, so there's lots of opportunities for that. And if you wanted to try your hand at getting to know some of the game skills and stuff before trying out for AFLW, or even to get seen by some of these scouts now for AFLW or some of the talent ID guys that pick people for combines, you can do all of that by just coming out and playing in any of our competitions across the year in AFL Ireland Women's. So we're 3 years into it, very successful to date, and hoping that that continues. Obviously, I think when we started initially, when we came back from Melbourne in 2017, we had 15 active players in the country, and within 1 year we got that to 200, within 2 years we got it to 350, something like that. So that's fantastic. More people playing, more opportunities, and now we're starting to do some work with more unis and even more secondary schools now over the coming year. We had plans to do stuff now, but obviously this year is out the window across the board. But yeah, we're going to continue along that vein of just giving opportunities to women of all ages and abilities to come out and try the sport and take from it what you want and compete at it at whatever level you want. We just want people playing. It's a fun sport. It's an enjoyable sport. And the more people that get out and have a kick, the better, basically.
Yeah, like I was going to ask, what if someone was kind of listening to this, like maybe a mom of like a daughter or anyone, just kind of maybe anyone who's kind of interested in sport and just kind of want to kind of go around and kick out. Like, as you said, there's a club kind of within an hour, hopefully, of kind of where everyone is living. What are the applicable skills? Like, what is your advice to someone who's kind of thinking about starting out, maybe is about to start out, but they're not really too sure kind of how to go about it? Like,
so basically, we kind of say the same to everybody. We try and hold our events in blitz format in general. So normally there'd be one, and it's not too full on either. Normally there'd be once a month or so, and we try to do that across the year. Now, unfortunately, pretty much every event we've had is cancelled this year, but generally you'd be looking at within 4 weeks somewhere there will be a competition that you can go along to. And the way we do it is we try and get everybody in the one location on the one day. So generally you'd be looking at maybe 60, 70, 80 girls playing on one day. Some of the girls have played before, Some of the girls have represented Ireland. Some of the AFLW girls will be there. But a lot of the girls will be coming down and will never have picked up a Sherrin before or never kicked a Sherrin before. And in a lot of cases, they're initially a bit apprehensive about that. But what we say is, look, come on down. It's a taster session. We're there to show people the game. And normally we'd start off with like a skills and coaching session before we play any games anyway. And then that might be an hour or so. So we'd have a number of coaches there that will show you how to kick the ball, how to hand pass the ball, go through some of the rules. And then we would do like some blitz style games. So a bit like the sevens in GA, where you might play four or five matches over 3 or 4 hours. So it's all nice and short and sharp stuff where you're kind of learning. Everybody's in the same boat. Nobody is getting pumped in terms of teams massively beating other teams because the games are only on for like 20 minutes or so. So you get that opportunity to just immerse yourself in it for a day and meet all the other players, meet all the other teams, learn as you go. And we do coaching in-game and stuff as well. So normally we get a lot of people contacting us through our social media on AFL Ireland Women's on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and that. And we would initially take players' details, be it a WhatsApp or an email address, and then we would just direct you to where the next event is on. We'd send you out the details. And as I say, if you can make it, great. If you can't, don't worry about it. Come along to the next one. It's not too serious. We do want people to have fun in terms of getting exposed to the game and enjoy themselves, because that's the ultimate aim, is that everybody comes back and wants to play some more. And that format tends to work pretty well for us at the minute. So over the last 2 years now, we would have introduced a universities competition to that same effect. So our first one was last season, and we had teams from 6 different universities around Ireland playing in a blitz format. So again, the majority of those players wouldn't have played before, so they've just got involved through uni clubs. They've come along, they've played in a competition. We've gone on to select an Irish universities team from that, and they went on to play Great Britain Universities at the National Sports Campus in Dublin last April. And that was the first ever international universities women's and men's game anywhere in the world. So it was amazing, you know. So we're continuously trying to do new things, continuously innovating, getting new people involved. And as I said, we were about to start some very exciting stuff with secondary school, post-primary school level, where we were going to do something similar, have the very first post-primary school competition and do some clinics in schools maybe over a number of months, then have a competition or so. But that'll just push out to 2021, but it'll definitely happen soon. So no matter what age you are, there's an opportunity for you to have a kick at some stage. So I just say, get in touch with us on Facebook or Instagram, send us a message, tell us who you are, where you are, what age you are, and we let you know when the next opportunity is there to have a kick.
Yeah, he's really nice, if anyone's listening. Trust me, Michael is a nice guy. But
that was part one of my interview with Michael Corrane. Next week, I promise we'll got a full snippet this time. But next week, he'll continue to talk to us about what it's like to basically be an AFLW recruit, how the people come over, and what it's like to set up an AFLW team. I think for context, people should know that the AFLW Ireland team is still taking recruits. And you can follow them on Instagram at AFLW Ireland. And if you're interested in playing the game, slide into their DMs and hit them up and he can deal with you from there. So as I said, tune in next week for part two, where he'll dive into that. And he'll talk about, I suppose, what it's like in AFLW Ireland at the minute and its highs and lows. So tune in and enjoy. Cheerio. And don't forget to follow us on social at @JoannaOr_OX and at Big Red Bench. Cheerio.
The Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.